Welcome to Gridiron Icons, Arkansas's greatest high school coaches podcast, powered by Scorebook Live, hosted by Kyle Sutherland. Support the show by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts, and also leave us a five-star rating and a written review.
Lunny has been synonymous with immense football success for three quarters of a century, starting with John Lunny, who lettered four times for the Razorbacks from 1946 to 49, followed by his grandson, Barry Jr., who did the same from 1992 to 95, while quarterbacking the Hogs to the SEC championship his senior season and is now the offensive coordinator at the University of Illinois. Between John and Barry Jr. was Barry Sr., who may not have the accolades as a player that his father and son did, but went on to become one of the greatest to ever walk the sidelines in Arkansas prep football history. Barry Sr. got his start as a head coach at BB in 1987, leading the Badgers for two seasons before taking the same position at Fort Smith Southside, where he led the program to four state titles. 16 years after taking the job at Southside, Lunny moved away from the River Valley further north to Bentonville, where he also built the Tigers into a juggernaut, winning an additional four state titles, including his last one in 2014 prior to his retirement. In episode 23 of Gridiron Icons, we catch up with the ninth winningest coach in state history on what he has been up to post-retirement, among much more regarding his life and overall illustrious career. Here we are talking about 10 years or so post-retirement since you last won the state championship with Bentonville in 2014. And I know you're also very involved in FCA right now, which we'll get into that towards the end. But other than maybe hanging out with the grandkids and just enjoying life in retirement, what have you been doing since that time?
Well, that's really it, Kyle. You know, I just went to work with FCA fairly soon after retirement. I had actually started working with a friend of mine who was in my home group that we had at church, and he wanted somebody to come to kind of a pastoral administrative job, I guess, with his employees, about 80 employees. And so I kind of took that under as a kind of a chaplain for a company, and a little outside of my comfort zone. It was in still erection business, but it was dealing with people. It was real challenging for me in some ways, but it was really good. People are people regardless, right? And so I enjoyed that, and then transitioned after a couple of years into when the call kind of came from FCA, and been doing FCA. But yeah, I there's really no retirement, I don't think, you know, for me. It's just I'm been in good health. I could still coach. It's just one of those deals I wanted. Yeah, I just felt as time was right to transition to do something else with my life. I got back into hunting, which I had done as assistant coach early on years when, but enjoyed that with a couple coaching friends of mine, bow hunting, and just the outdoors. Love the outdoors. So and following football, you know, from a safe distance. So that's been good.
So growing up in the River Valley, you're up in the Fort Smith area, and I guess you were pretty much there either in Oklahoma in college, and then of course until you went to Bentonville, you spent basically your entire life in the River Valley. And I usually start off by asking when it was that you got into coach, or when you got into sports, whether it be football or anything else. But considering your bloodline, I would imagine that it was pretty much just from the time that you grew up, you were a football guy. Your dad, John, was a four-year letterman. And then, of course, your son, Barry Jr., was also a four-year letterman at the University of Arkansas. But if I remember correctly, there was a connection with Coach Barnhill, Coach Stansel, and your father. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, thanks. You know, it was one of the things I did over the years when coaches come in recruiting, college coaches come in recruiting my kids. I really enjoyed asking the coaches, tell me your coaching tree. Where are you from? What's your, you know, and it gave me an idea a little bit about them and their background. And, you know, my coaching tree was that. And I appreciate you mentioning that. It had such a strong influence on my life. My head high school coach, Bill Stansel, And my father were teammates at the University of Arkansas under John Barnhill. John Barnhill had been an assistant coach under George Nalen, Nalen Stadium, if that rings a bell to the football fans, SEC, who was won some, I forget how many national championships at the University of Tennessee. So the coaching tree, I got it at home, and I got it at when I got to high school, and actually junior high, because our junior high systems were one of the first that I was aware of in our area, maybe our state or region, where our junior high systems were locked in with the high school programs, especially in the bigger schools that might have been a little bit more formed. But that's what it was. A high school program, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, did the same thing that the high schools were doing, obviously on a limited basis, just from the, you know, age challenges that you had to do everything, but the same numbering system, all that terminology. So growing up, I heard, and matter of fact, if you go to Bentonville today and walk in to their indoor out facility, up on the wall is the mantra of the game maxims that were brought from Tennessee, that Tennessee still has, that were used at Northside High School when I was in school, about, you know, winning, the things that are important in the belief system. And those are still on the wall today at Bentonville. And so those things were bred into me a very early: structure, defense, kicking game, you know, wins games. And you know, obviously there's been a huge transition offensively with the passing game over the last decade or so. But I still have contention to believe that still you better be pretty good defense to make some stops sometimes. So, yeah, I grew up in that environment that has had a tremendous influence on my coaching and the way I coached, and fine-tuned some of the things, hopefully, that we were able to use over the years, but never got very far away from those core beliefs. And so, yeah, I heard it for a long time, and so it was just kind of who I am.
And you grew up in a time around the Fort Smith area that football was booming, between what Coach Stansel was doing at Northside, but also one that I think people forget about is St. Ann's, which was St. Ann's was the Pulaski Academy before Pulaski Academy, the Shiloh Christian before Shiloh Christian. So on top of, you know, your dad being a great Razorback player, and of course hearing all the stories about that, but then growing up in a football area that the River Valley still is, don't get me wrong, but especially at that time between St. Ann's, Fort Smith, Northside, just what was it like growing up in that particular time?
Yeah, another thing. And I, since you've got no one, I can do this, and you know, you're talking to Barry, so I can do it. Some things that get lost a little bit in that, and I'm very proud of my father, even though he only coached a very short period of time, he was a St. Ann's coach at one time. And actually, I think the only undefeated season at that time that they'd ever had was his second year he coached there. I think it might have been in 50, 51, somewhere in there. I can remember him telling stories. He told one of his better players to hit the road. He wasn't doing something right, you know, and he just ran him off. And he told me, I remember very young, he'd tell me, he said, only had 12 players on the team at that time. And so he's running his best player off and going to be down to 11. And he said, I had my fingers crossed behind my back the whole time he'd come back. And he did. They had an undefeated season. And then he left after 2 years at St. Ann's, I believe, and went to Fort Smith High School at that time, where he had played and coached there with the man named Steve White, and also coached, you know, with, it was a really an interesting type. There was a Clyde Horton, who ended up being at Little Rock Central for decades and even volunteering after he had retired when I was coaching at Southside. I saw him on the field. He was on that staff and at Fort Smith, and he and my dad remained friends for years. And Coach Horton was just such a kind and generous man. I mean, even my last year at Bentonville, when we won the state championship in 14, he was Mr. Coach Horton was up at the top of the runway when I came to the dressing room, waiting to hug me and tell me how proud his my dad would be of me if he were here. So, you know, it meant a lot to me. There was a connection there as well that. A very powerful lot of, and then George Laws came on into the scene and just had an incredible run. There's some great athletes in Fort Smith during those times. There sure was.
And I also wanted to add about your dad talking about the connection with Coach Stansel, Coach Barnhill playing for him, and then playing with Coach Stansel. But also, I believe your dad was teammates with Clyde Smackover Scott, also Pat Summerall there. So played with some pretty famous guys with the Razorbacks.
Yeah, it was a really neat time for little skinny, not knee kids growing up and listening to the stories and getting to go to the Letterman's Club back in the day when we'd make the trek up old Highway 71 for the interstate, which was another adventure just in itself, just to get to the games and back, being able to go and see. And of course, I didn't appreciate it as much then, the people, as I did later on in life, but getting to meet Clyde Scott and some of the people that I'd heard about for years, and later on in life being able to be around some of those, it was a pretty special group of people. My father was really exceptionally fast for a big man. He was big back then, 225 pounds, which was kind of big. And but he could run. He actually ran on the 4x100 yard, not meter, team. At Fort Smith High School. And so that was one of the things they used, his ability to run and pull out the single wing and get out in front and block for Clyde Scott. So Muscles Campbell, I've heard so many stories about Muscles Campbell and the guys there. Kenny Holland, who was another running back who actually was on the administrative staff at Northeastern State University where I went to college. He was an assistant AD when I went over there. So, it was fun getting to meet so many people who were so have so many connections to the University of Arkansas and throughout this state as it has been.
And as far as you're concerned, we could probably make an entire podcast series. I know you're a very humble guy and you might scoff at this, but we could probably make an entire podcast series over your entire coaching career. But you haven't really heard a whole lot about your playing career at Northeastern State. Talk about that. What position were you and, of course, playing there, just going across the border over into Oklahoma?
Yeah. There were several of us that went from Fort Smith. It was a pretty interesting time because Coach Stansel, again, it was my coach, and it was incidentally his last year coaching when I my senior year, and he got out and became the AD in Fort Smith, and then later a state representative and represented in Fort Smith area as a state representative in the Arkansas State Legislature for a number of years, but he started his career at Arkansas Tech. Football career, then the war. And then he went off to the war. And then when he came back, it's when he went to the University of Arkansas. But when he was at Tech, one of his teammates was Tracy Norwood, who was now the head coach at Northeastern State University. So there was a connection between Coach Stansel and going back with Arkansas Tech with Coach Norwood. And so they started recruiting Fort Smith. There was just such a strong pipeline of Fort Smith Northside, or at that time, basically Fort Smith High School athletes going to Arkansas Tech. If they didn't go to the university, there was a strong, strong number. And so they started recruiting the Fort Smith area with Coach Stansel when Coach Norwood got there and had the accessibility with the relationship built in with Coach Stansel. So there were several of us that went over, actually played two games in Fort Smith between Northeastern and Arkansas Tech. They met at, they deemed it a neutral site, and it was huge crowds. It was really a neat time in Fort Smith, but you had a lot of obviously Arkansas Tech people and then Northeastern, and they were great crowds, great ball games. So, I went over as a quarterback, truthfully, I was a very average athlete. I was good enough to get a small school scholarship. Actually, it was a half scholarship, and I was told if you come over and win a starting battle, then we'll put you on full. Injured my shoulder, I could see the right. I was smart enough. One way, I wasn't a great athlete, but I was at least smart enough to kind of see the handwriting on the wall. I probably couldn't throw the ball with the same velocity and the depth at college at that time, I probably would have had maybe some scope surgery, but they just didn't do it back then. Right. And so I asked to move to receiver to give myself a chance to compete. And I did. I won a starting position. And I started for, I think, two and a half years. I got beat out my senior year by they're always trying to recruit better, and that's what college is all about. They brought a junior college guy, and I lost my starting position. Taught me a lot. I didn't like it was tough, you know, sit on the bench after you, especially your senior year. But I worked my way back on the field probably the last, I think, five games of the season because, you know, I could catch the ball. I mean, I might not be able to outrun somebody, but they needed first downs, and there were some – the other guy was fast, but he didn't catch the ball a lot. So, anyway, I worked my way back out on the field. So, I ended up playing wide receiver. And, you know, you got to remember those days that we were more glorified blockers and try to get people out of the box. It was more of a running offense. But I enjoyed – I tremendously enjoyed my time there and learned a lot of football. And it was fun. I got my college degree and it sent me on my way.
I don't want to get too far ahead here, but I'll forget later on if I don't ask now. Did you use that scenario of you losing your starting position with any of your players during your coaching career?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, once you've done something and you experienced it yourself, it's so much easier to relate and to talk to kids about it. I've done it with my boys. You know, if you regress here, but, you know, when Barry had started, I forget how many games, 40-something straight games, and his senior year, he was getting, you know, he was going to be replaced, and he didn't start the first game against, I think it was SMU. And that was a hard thing when you've been a starter. And so I was able to talk to him about it, and I was so proud of him because he just, you know, he, as we talked through it, if you're going to be the best backup quarterback in the SEC, and so his work habits and everything, and lo and behold, it didn't take but about half a game to put him back in, and then he never missed another start. But, you know, you go through that. I've done it with my players, obviously, and it's much easier to relate sometimes when you've been there yourself. And so you kind of can see it from all aspects.
And you started, speaking of your coaching career, you started that. Now, is it Vian or Vian, Oklahoma?
Vian.
Vian. Yeah, people that are listening to this that are listeners and longtime followers of my content will know I'm notorious for mispronouncing towns and various names of athletes. So I'm at least good for one per episode, one or two per episode. But started there in 1974 as an assistant and then ended up working as assistant also at Greenwood, coming back to Arkansas, then took your first head coaching position at Beebe. Now, I said a little earlier that you've been pretty much in the River Valley your whole life other than Bentonville. I guess you spent a little bit of time, 2 years, in Central Arkansas. So, of course, you spent that time as an assistant and talk about getting your first head coaching position at Beebe.
Well, I got out of coaching for 2 years. And that's a whole nother podcast episode. I'd gotten frustrated because I couldn't even get an interview for a head job. I mean, I was trying to take advantage of every connection I had. We had just finished the first state championship in Southside's history, 1983. By the way, I gotta get this in there. So Keith Jackson, listen, he always says this, but we kept him from getting it. He has a national championship ring at OU and a world championship, NFL championship, I guess with Green Bay, I think it was. And he always looks at me and you guys kept me from having the state championship when he's at Parkview. As many people said, it might have been the biggest upset in high school playoff history when Southside, we went down as the 4 seed and upset in the finals at Little Rock Parkview with Keith Jackson and James Rouse. It was an incredible team. And, but we won a state championship in 83. I felt like I'd been offensive coordinator, been a defensive coordinator, and I felt like it was time to be a head coach. And I just, you know, ran out ahead of myself and got frustrated because I couldn't even get an interview. I kept getting back, well, hey, if you just had 1 year of coaching experience, we'd love to have you, but boy, we just don't want to hire anybody without any experience. So I got out of coaching for 2 years, was miserable, and, got back in, went back. Saw one of my good friends that it was on the staff when I was defensive coordinator at Greenwood, Jim Cox, who grew up in Greenwood, played in Greenwood, played at Wichita Baptist. And Jim had just gotten hired as the head coach at Fordyce and saw him at church, congratulated. And he said, hey, I got a job open if you want it. I said, I'm coming. He laughed. I said, no, I'm coming. I want back in. And he said, are you serious? I said, yeah. And he's coach. He said, Barry, it's just a junior high job. And I said, I don't care. So I loaded up, went to Fordyce as 7th grade coach and 9th grade coach, and it wasn't on contract to do it, but he got it put on to be helping in high school as well. So I had three, they had 7th grade, 2-a-days, 9th grade, 2-a-days, and high school 2-a-days. I had 6 practices a day for several weeks, but I was loving it. Glad to get back in it, and it really is another story. But the job open at BB, I didn't even apply. Jim tried to get me to apply, so I'm not doing it. I've been there before, and he actually filled out about half the application for me, had me sign it, send it in, and I had no expectations. And lo and behold, to get called, and you know, rest is history. It was incredible. It was God's hand and grace all over that to open the doors up, and just loved it at BB. It was I would have still been there. I love the community, their football school. It's a great location, had wonderful facilities. The people embraced us. My young family, it was enjoying it. And the only they've asked me to give them a promise to stay there to get them through the transition to, I think, going to AAA out of AA. I can't remember. We've had so many classification changes, but they were within 2 years, they were making a step up. And the superintendent asked me to give him a promise to be there, and I said yes. Walked out of the door, and then this weird deal came over me, and I knocked on his door and opened up. I said, "Mr. Marshall," and he said, "Yes, sir." I said, "You know, I'm here. I'm you've given me this opportunity. Nobody else. I'm here." But I said, "If by chance, some reason, Joe Fred Young at Northside or Bob Gatlin at Southside lose their mind and leave their job, and for some bizarre reason, I'd have a chance to get it, and some bizarre reason they would call me, I'd want to be able to get out of that commitment." And he kind of laughed and he said, "Noted."
There it goes. Well, and that was going to lead into my next question, how he got into Southside. I figured it was probably, you know, going back home and of course, also a bigger classification. Before we get into that, though, I do want to backtrack one more time because you brought up a great point with that 1983 state championship that we certainly do not want to miss on. You hit on all the main points. Probably the biggest upset in state championship, maybe even state postseason history, possibly. I think you could definitely argue that. Maybe along with Rising over Shiloh Christian in 2000. But Southside was 11-2 coming in that game, so certainly no chump whatsoever. I mean, they're in the state finals. But Parkview, 12-0, had one of the greatest players to ever come through the state of Arkansas, and Keith Jackson, as you just talked about.
Right.
And just going into that week, I can't even imagine what that was like. Now, I know the feeling of losing a state championship, never won one. But I do know what it's like to win big games and just the motivation that the coaches bring upon the players. But what was that week like leading up to it? I'm sure the guys knew what was being said in the papers. There was no social media at that time. But I can imagine you guys had plenty of fuel for that entire game.
Well, you know, thank you for doing that. You got it. The history on this, too, is important. We lost the last game of the season against Northside, which is a huge, huge game, right? During this stretch, years, 20 years or so, and be truthful, with all deference to other rivalries, there's some great rivalries in this state. But at that time, both schools were winning championships. 2 years before I came back from Bentonville, from BB to take the job, Northside and Southside, 2 years in a row, state finals against each other. Plus, they'd already played during the regular season. That last game of the year in Fort Smith during those years, you really just couldn't imagine the intensity all week long, the rivalry, during lunch hour, just the people working in the same office buildings that were Northside and Southside graduated. It was very intense. Some of it got a little not good, right? But it was just, there was a lot of intensity. And we'd lost 23-20, I believe, to Northside in another standing room only, very intense night. The problem with playing that game, week 10, if you go in the playoffs, you cannot duplicate that environment, that whole week in that first round playoff. And it was always a difficult task to get your team ready the next week to play in the playoffs. And sometimes it was just you hung on by the skin of your teeth, right, against a lower seed. So we were deflated, and we played every game on the road, not one home game. We had to go to Texarkana to play, and we pedaled around and find a way to tie it up at halftime. We were terrible the first half, but we found a way to tie it up at first half, and it was like the kids, you could tell, it was like, hey, we can win this thing. You know, they kind of got their their mojo back. They got to, I got out of the funk. They got feeling sorry for themselves. You know, it all was out. We're having fun again. And we came back and won that game. Then we go to Little Rock McClellan on the road, and they had our radio announcer had been at Southside for like 15 or 20 years. So it was the hardest hitting football game he had ever, high school football game he had ever called in his life. I can't remember the names. There was a young man named Cooney, last name Cooney, went to the University of Arkansas, was a defensive back and had a stellar career. Marshall, maybe, Marshall Cooney or Anthony Cooney. They had a receiver that went to Vanderbilt. And we hung on at the end, and they were trying to kick a field goal with time running out to put it in overtime, and they couldn't get the playoff. They drove the length of the field, and we won another game. Then we go to Pine Bluff. Guess who's waiting for us at Pine Bluff? Eric Mitchell, probably on my list of top five athletes that I've ever seen. He's in there. Incredible athlete. Went to the University of Oklahoma, as many know. And we end up running a fake punt, doing it, and we won, upset Pine Bluff at Pine Bluff in front of an incredible crowd. So to get there, what was just, you know, we're thinking, goodness gracious. But our kids were zoned back in, and we were just like a baseball team. And what we see right now, like, we got hot at the right time. Things started clicking. Coach Gatlin had put an incredible game plan together. And of course, one of the things that we felt defensively, I was a defensive back coach, that if we can find a way to make James Rouse run east and west, just not let him gash us all night long, and if we could find a way to stop Keith Jackson, or limit, not stop him, but limit his big play, we got a chance, because they had not been in that scenario. Nobody had stopped them. Nobody made them. And when you went back, I can't remember the numbers, but there was minuscule times that they were in third and long. I mean, if they were in third down, it was third and two or one or something like that. And we were able to do that. We kept the ball away from them offensively, sustained drives, ran the clock. And we basically went to man in the coverage and on third down situations, pulled a linebacker out, put an extra defensive back in, and basically were triple teaming Keith Jackson and daring them to do something different. And they, you know, it, you could tell that they were frustrated because they hadn't been there before. And we hung on one. And even talking about it now, I get kind of excited about it. It was pretty incredible.
So that was your first state championship experience as a coach, at least. And then you take the job at BB again, are there for 2 years. And after the 89 season, that job does come open. You had just mentioned about your promise that I guess you could, I don't know if I can necessarily say you went back on it, because you made the promise, and then 5 seconds later you made a little bit of adjustment to it. So you still kept your word, and so ends up the job comes open.
Yeah, he said no to it.
Yeah, exactly. No to it. So he was very well aware. It's not like you caught him by surprise. So take that job, and after the 1989 season, but it's not with your high school. It's with the bitter rival, as you say, the Battle of Rogers Avenue. Everybody knows about that. And so 1990 was your first season. Well, you won your first of four state championships there as a head coach. 1991, 30-6 over Springdale. And also, you didn't allow more than – you guys did not, throughout the playoffs, allow more than 7 points in a game during that postseason. Also won it in 1992 over Pine Bluff. You talked about them just a second ago, what a dynasty they were back in those days. Then 1997, 38-10 over Cabot. 2002, your last one as coach there, 17-10 over Springdale. Talking about that first one in 1991, again, I don't know that it can get much better than what you talked about from the 1983 game, just because of the magnitude. But what was it like winning your first one as a head coach?
Yeah, it's really surreal that even you pinch yourself from I guess I still struggle sometimes thinking, why me? You know, I don't know. It was just, here you are. You step back and you think about it, and your son is a quarterback. It took a long time to kind of wrap around that. It happened so quick during the season. You don't have time to stop and think about things because you're always preparing. And thank goodness, because I think the more you sit around and think about stuff more. You can get tight sometimes and, you know, just get overwhelmed by it. But you think back, my dad, it was pretty tough, you know, pretty bittersweet in some ways. Two men in my life that I really wanted to be proud and to see the smile on their face and the hug from them, and were the two men in my life who, my father and my high school coach. And they had both died, passed away within about 7 months of each other, the year before. Yeah, Barry, it would be 1990. After the 90 season. And so I think it was a mixed thing, you know, because I missed them not being there. And after I thought about it, that's kind of really the first thing I thought about. But then the longer you get away from it, you just realize how special it is. You never know if you're ever going to be back. I used to sit in the bleachers when I was at BB. I'd drive over to Little Rock and watch Southside Northside for 2 years in a row playing in the championship. I remember sitting at the top of the stadium with my staff, a couple of my staff members from BB and some of my players, and watching it. And, you know, just thinking, man, if I could ever get a chance to, I'd love to lead a team on the field in this climate, you know. But you just, truthfully, as you never know what's going to happen. So it was a really, really enjoyable time. Once I process all the other stuff, you know, and it's just life. And I'm not the only one that's had those things happen to them. But yeah, it was a little bittersweet. But at the same time, it's, you know, how many coaches get to do that with their sons, you know, being there as well. So great group of kids, wonderful group of kids and coaches.
Right. And you got to win that, like you said, with Barry Jr. right before he went to the University of Arkansas. And as a head coach, you had certainly dealt with college coaches before with the recruiting process. But what was it like with your son, not only just a college prospect, but going to the, I guess it was making the conversion from the SWC to the SEC at that time. Of course, he went on to be a 4-year letter winner, just like your father was, took them to the SEC championship in 1995, led them there. So what was that recruiting process like since it was within your own home?
You know, it was so much different than it is today. I wish they could go back, roll the clock back, and take some of the pressure off the kids and the coaches, quite frankly, that has been made. But that's a whole nother issue too, as well. But there were phone calls, a lot of phone calls, letters, you know, as I try to tell a lot of the players and families, the letters really, I mean, they're nice. They know who you are. Somebody knows who you are. It's maybe a GA, it may be an office personnel, and it may be the coach, right? But letters are letters. And when they send out thousands of letters. It's when they come to see you at practice. They come to watch spring football. When they pick the phone up, they invite you to camp and stuff, whatever. Well, there was no camps back then. But so what we did, because we talked about it as a family and just had a certain time of day that he could receive phone calls. So he did, because he's busy playing sports. He's a basketball player as well, baseball player, but, you know, during football. So there was a certain time in the evening he took calls. He would set it up. He handled it himself. We just gave him some parameters to do it. You know, truthfully, dad's ego got involved in it. You know, like, again, I can speak from a dad. So as I tell parents, you know, you're so proud of your kids and you want them to enjoy things. I couldn't even get him to take the visits. You know, I mean, UCLA did everything but come tie him up and take him back there. You know, he had a chance to go to Alabama and visit. There were several places. I said, why don't you just go take it? He goes, I know where I'm going. And see, this goes back to my dad taking him to games when I was working on Saturday mornings as a coach and didn't make the Razorback games, because he'd take my son. And so Barry went with him from knee high to, you know, he can remember and doing the same experience that I had, going into the, you know, the Letterman's Club and meeting people. And his statement was, I don't want to waste their time and my time. I know where I'm going to go. So it was not as, truthfully, wasn't as hectic as it could be, just because his own choice. He talked to people and he listened. I think we did a decent job, and he did a decent job of restricting the amount of calls and time. And really, cutting a lot of them off very early and just saying, you know, there's no sense wasting your time. I know I'm not coming to your school. That's what I wanted him to do for sure, is be honest with them and don't waste their money and their time if he had no interest at all.
I want to touch on your friendship with John Outlaw, because what with him, there was a turning point in your career. So 1996, you guys go 1-9. Obviously a really tough season there. But then you had probably the best turnaround in state history, one of. I would say that one, one of the more recent ones, was Carlisle in Class 2A after a winless season, then going to the state championship. But you guys went from 1-9 to 12-2, won a state championship, and you had switched from the I formation to the one back. And kind of a little quick story on John Outlaw here. So I'm sure you know that before he got to Arkadelphia, I was good in the early 70s. Mid-70s, really, really bad. My mom was actually a senior in 1975. They went 1-9 her senior year. Just really bad stretch there in the middle. He comes in, wins a state championship. Was it the year that he got to Arkadelphia, or pretty soon after?
I'm not sure it was the year.
It was right around the time. I mean, maybe within a year or two, kind of similar to, you know, your situation there at Southside, you know, really quickly after took over as a head coach. And then became, in 1987, was the first team from Arkansas in prep football history to be named to the USA Today Top 25 national poll. And then, of course, he went to Texas, and everybody really knows what he, or most people at least, maybe not quite my generation and behind that, know what he did there at Sherman and Lufkin and all the success he had. But y'all became friends, and I know that he actually also gave you some advice on finding kickers at soccer practice too. So start off, I know that was a lot there that I just unloaded, but kind of talk about your friendship with Coach Outlaw, going from the I formation and the one back, and, of course, finding kickers at soccer practice.
Yeah, we were actually in the wing tee. He was the one back. He was in the I.
That's
he was
right.
In
I had it backwards. Yeah, yeah.
That's all right. It, you know, I didn't really know Johnny until, I knew of him, and we probably crossed at a clinic or so somewhere along the way. But when I got to Southside, we were looking for games and just having a hard time finding games. And I reached out to him, I think, and I'm not sure how it happened, to be honest with you. I don't want to mislead you. But anyway, we got connected. He was at Sherman, and somehow we got connected. They were looking for games. We were looking for games. And so we end up getting together, and we started, a four game series with them, I think, if I'm not mistaken. We played them for about 4 years. And so once we did that contract with them, then obviously necessitated a little bit more communications with them, arrangements. Hey, can you recommend places to eat? Can we, you know, all these things that we need to do. And so we spent some time on the phone and developed some relationships for the next couple of years. And I had started a high school football clinic in Fort Smith at the time. And truthfully, I got tired of going to Central Arkansas for all the clinics, and I really wanted to do something different. I had a large sponsor in the Fort Smith area that decided to help us give us finances to bring in good speakers. And so I started doing a clinic in Fort Smith. And Johnny was one of the first guys I reached out to come and speak at our clinic. And we were having over 100, 130 coaches come, you know, which was pretty good when you're competing in a brand new clinic. And but we brought in guys like him. We brought in college coaches, and made it a really neat deal. So we spent time together there in a hotel room when he came. And I don't know. We just hit it off. You know, we just enjoyed it. And we stayed in touch. Then he left to go to Lufkin. And, you know, I think, as I encourage coaches to do even today, I said, find you some guys that you enjoy, that you have a relationship in this business, that you can pick up the phone and call during the season, or season, and just, how's it going? What's going on? You know, you'd be so surprised to find out those guys are going through the same things you're going through a lot of times, whether it's parents or kids or certain classes, certain recruiting, whatever. And, you know, there's a little bit of comfort in the fact that you get so tunnel vision sometimes. You think you're the only one going through these problems. You pick up the phone. Johnny and I were we had that in common. I mean, he'd pick up phone and call, and I'd be going through something that he was going through, and we'd talk about it, and it just developed. And he called and reached out. We had gone from 1-9 to, like you said, 12-2, and won a state championship. And so I get a call from him. How in the world did you, you know, something along with, what did you do? And I said, well, you like you know, we have to have some good players. You know, we were all sophomores last year, playing about 8 or 9 sophomores on Friday nights, not good. But we went through it, and he said, Barry, down in Texas, primarily, it's eye formation, isolation, counter, 3 yards, cloud of dust. He said, I got athletes walking the hall I know could be great receivers, but they don't want to come out here and block. And can we get together and talk about your transition into the, you know, the one back? And it wasn't no huddle so much. It was just, you know, just the fast pace of going to 4 wides, 5 wides receiver. And so we met Hot Springs, myself, my offensive line coach, him and a couple of his coaches, and spent some time just showing what we did in the transition. It was pretty simple, really. It wasn't near as complex as it evolved to over the next several years. And we were still learning it, quite frankly. As I told people about going, winning 12 games, I said, I don't know if we knew what we were doing as much as the defenses just didn't know what they were doing, how to stop it. So it was kind of a combination of both things, I think. We had a lot of beginner's luck, and the defenses had not, overall, the big scheme had not, they weren't ready for, do we play man? Do we play zone? How do we do this? You know, when you have some built-in hot reads and stuff. So Johnny's transition, I was very flattered, because I had so much respect for him as a coach. And I was flattered that he called and he transitioned. I'm sure he picked other people's brains too. I'm not saying it was just our system. And he got those guys out and made a difference and won state championship in the largest classification in Texas. And yes, he did. Standing down at Sherman, Texas, I was watching his kicker kick, who I think was going to Baylor or Texas. I'm not sure. And the guy was kicking it out back, a soccer guy. And I said, where in the world did you get that? He said, well, a funny story. He said, I decided to do it. We didn't have a kicker. I tried it. The guy can do it. And he said, I just give him a schedule for practice and tell him I don't want to see him until we need their kickers. He's over on some field practice, and then a certain time he shows up and kicks, and then I have him recruit me another junior or sophomore guys in soccer that might be able to kick a football every year. And so I took his advice, and man, it led us to some really great kickers at Southside.
Yeah, that's kind of like what a lot of football coaches do, going and getting kickers from soccer practice. Kind of like what Houston Nutt did with track guys for his defensive backs. You know, not all of them could catch, but they could keep up with people and bat down balls. So it worked out just fine. So now in 97, that championship that you won after.
Yeah, so we had a good trade-off.
Yeah, absolutely. And that 97 championship, when we just talked about, you know, the big rebound from 1-9 to 12-2, was that with Daniel, your younger son?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So you got to win a state championship with both of your boys. Now, I've done a few of these I've done a lot where coaches have been able to coach their sons, and plenty have also won a state championship with them. I think Mike Malham with his son Matt was one of them, and plenty of others that you could name, but pretty special to definitely be able to do that with both of your boys.
Scott Reed,
that's right. Yeah, with Taylor, that's right.
And by the way, this clicked in my mind. His dad, Bill Reed, was the coach at Texarkana the night we went down to Southside and won that first game on the road. Coach Reed was coaching there at Texarkana at that time. So it was a special game because he's a great coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and won a few state championships at Jacksonville as well. Bill Reed, definitely one of the legends, along with his son Scott, who is still in an ongoing, at the time of this recording, doing some great things at Cabot after winning multiple state championships at El Dorado. So, as I mentioned, win the last one at Southside in 2002, 17-10 over Springdale. Then, was it after the 2004 season you took the Bentonville job?
It was after my last year at Southside was 2004, yes.
And so right before 2005, took the job at Bentonville, and I'd say things went pretty well there. You went 97 and 25 and won an additional 4 state titles there. Of course, you know, other than Wilson Matthews, you and Frank McClellan, the winningest coach in high school football history in Arkansas, are the only two that have won 8 state titles. So you do 4-4 at Southside and then Bentonville. What was it? I mean, I know Northwest Arkansas really over the last 20, 30 years has really, really just continued to boom. What was it that wanted you to make this transition?
You know, just for me personally, and I've had this talk with Scott Reed and some of the other guys too across the state that are, you know, I'd been at Southside and it made no sense for me to leave. Everybody around me was, athletic director was my coaches, you know, a quarterback coach, Coach Roland at Northside, my family, my wife's family, Mr. Haber, the principal, all these, it was familiar people, but you know, just to tell you, just truth blankly, I just felt like there was something else to do. I needed another challenge. Right or wrong, there seemed to have fallen a little complacency within our fan base. I think the expectations of winning just were so maybe unrealistic, like they get everywhere nowadays, that, you know, it's just regular games, the attendance started dropping off. And even my wife said something, what's wrong with our people? You know, we're winning games, but they're not coming like they used to. Well, they show up for the last game. They get so used to winning sometimes that they don't, you know, they don't appreciate it. And I'm not comparing, please don't take this the wrong way, I'm not comparing myself to anything along the lines of Nick Saban, but I heard him say something a few years ago. You know, he said, people, to his student body and people, you need to appreciate winning. You know, it's hard to win. And I don't know, sometimes I think it was just, we just lost a little momentum. I could just sense it. And I thought, well, maybe they're tired of me and maybe I'm tired of them. Maybe it's just time to do something different. So there's a lot of other stuff that went into it, but I just felt like a new challenge. Went to Texas. I had, Johnny called and got me some interviews with some people in Texas. Went down, thought one, my wife went with me. We thought, man, this is it. It's going to be exciting Texas football. But after the interview, I just felt like, no, just something wasn't. And my wife said something to me. And I interviewed two different districts in Texas and had an opportunity in one of them. And she said, let's just stay home. Arkansas is our home. And we know people and they know us. And we'd have to just completely start over down here. And I said, you're right. This opportunity came at Bentonville. They had made a huge commitment. I could tell. Some people talk about making commitments they had because they just were in the process of finishing up this new, beautiful indoor facility and stadium that rivaled just about anywhere around at the time. And I got also an opportunity at Bentonville that you just weren't getting at other places I was looking at in Arkansas at the time. Barry and them had just got fired at San Jose State, where he was an offensive coordinator with Fitz Hill. And he was, my daughter-in-law's mother was dying with cancer in Coffeyville, Kansas. And he just said, I got to get back close, get her there. It's been too hard on her. And he turned down some small college stuff to come here and work with me with the hopes he'd just be here a year or two in this process. But they, being the school district, said, we'll, even though he didn't have his teaching certificate, he'd like 3 hours of getting his teaching degree. We were going through that transition where you could take a test and get certified. So they made it so attractive to get him here to work. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to do that. Maybe we could do this, maybe working together and with the staff I was able to bring in, which they gave me, which was incredible. It was certainly a challenge, but I'm glad he was here to help through that.
And talking about just as a you use a kind of an analyzation here, just feeding the monster that really comes with winning big, you know, winning multiple state championships and just continuing to really keep at that level. Because once you start winning state championships, you win multiple ones, people are wondering why you don't blow everybody out. I mean, you know how the whole entire process goes. Well, from 2008 to 2014, I believe it was 6 state championships in that time that at least y'all went to. Now, you won 4 of them. And then, of course, you won in 2008, 32-20 over Southside, which we'll get into that here in a second. 2010, 49-28 over Fayetteville. 13 on a frigid night in Little Rock. 39-28 over Cabot. I was there as a fan, and it was pure misery. Then 2014, 24-21 over Fayetteville in a game that was not lacking of any fireworks. We'll definitely touch on that one, too, but we'll touch on the first one at Bentonville in 2008. You face your former team that you'd had so much success at, 4 years removed from when you took the Bentonville job. What was the feeling like just facing off against your old team on the biggest stage?
Yeah, that was hard. It was different. Obviously, my allegiance was with the black and gold, 100%. But there's still so many familiar faces and people on the sideline, administrators and all. It was a little difficult. Not once the game started. You know, I think most of it was just that, like, 12-hour period or 14-hour, 24-hour period day before the game, right? But it was an incredible experience. We had a different football team. We talk about defense and kicking game is in my DNA. We were exceptionally good on defense. We were probably average on offense, but we were exceptional defense, and our kicking game was very good. You can look in that game and see some kickoff returns that made a huge difference. We started drives at midfield. Turnovers made the difference that year. I can't remember our average starting field position, but it was like crazy, you know, and it needed to be because we had a young quarterback. It was a running quarterback, sophomore, and we just didn't have any explosive playmakers. But, man, we were good up front on offense. And, you know, that game started off terrible for us. The opening drive, we take the ball and drive down the length of the field and down on the goal line, maybe the 8 or 10 yard line. Our quarterback, Pearson Jean, ran, a sophomore, and he fell awkwardly and broke his collarbone. And so we're now back to our backup, which wasn't a negative thing, but it's just still not our whole game plan. Our backup was more of a thrower than a runner. And although we weren't a great throwing team, so we had to, and Barry was calling offenses, but we had to shift some things and right early in the game. So like the second or third series wasn't as good offensively, but we were good defensively. And if you look at the game, our defense just did an incredible job. They had a really good running back. I can't forget his name. I forget his name now, but and they're good receivers, but we just played exceptional defense and got adjusted and made some changes and had some guys having to go both ways during that stretch, but it was a great feeling
winning that game. You don't see a lot of 7A teams have the guys go, but you see it some, but yeah, it's definitely not common, especially in 6 and 7A. And as I mentioned, 2010, 2014, you got the wins over Fayetteville. It's always great to beat your rival, especially for the state's largest prize. But that 2013 game, I look at games that I was associated with as a player and maybe as media, as a fan. I would say that might be the coldest game that in Arkansas that I have ever been associated with. And again, I was just there as a ticket holder fan and playing the dead tee. I mean, it ended up fine for you guys. You guys won the game and everything by 11 points. But playing against Mike Malham dead tee in that kind of weather does not sound like a lot of fun to me.
Well, it's not a recipe to win if you played against Mike much at all. You you try not to, as a head coach, to show worry or fear in your eyes to your team. But, you know, if you remember correctly, Kyle, the game had been postponed a week. But the week before, it was terrible weather. Not that this Saturday wasn't, but it was impassable. We couldn't even get off the hill. And my mind went, oh, my gosh, could there be a greater script for Mike and, you know, this football team? We like to throw. And it's miserable and cold, and they want to take – and I know how many times is he going to go on fourth down, and it doesn't matter where on the field he's going to go on fourth down. And so it's so concerning, and if you can let it, it gets in your head. And so we worked so hard just saying, guys, we can simulate this all you want in practice, this dead tee. It's going to take you just trust us. It's going to take you a quarter to get used to it. It's going to take about a whole quarter to get used to the way they come off the ball, the great play action, the great fakes that they do. Just hang in there. Don't lose heart. We got two turnovers. It's short in the field that night, if you remember. But I think the thing that stands out to me is this, that we threw and caught the ball like it was 75 degrees and warm and no wind. It was, I still think back to that. And I saw some of those guys not too long ago at one of the games, and we talked about it. I watched us during warm up, and we were throwing and catching the ball fairly good. But in the game, it was incredible. It wet, rainy, frigid, and it was like as dry. So I credit our guys just to locking in and focusing. And it was just a really outstanding performance.
And the next year and your final game of your coaching career, as I said, it's there had already been some fireworks and plenty of games that you had coached in, dating all the way back to the first state championship that you had gotten a taste of as a coach in 1983 over Parkview. But again, just the magnitude of this one also being against rival Fayetteville too. I mean, this was at the time when Northwest Arkansas was just, this was right before, you know, the Bryant dynasty and all that, Northwest Arkansas football, and it's still very, very good. But at that point, winning championships every single year, and 24-21 over Fayetteville. And as I said, the second time that you had done that, beating the Purple Dogs, but I don't want to joke about this. This is no joking matter, but I can imagine the final seconds probably about gave you a heart attack just with how crazy it all was. You know, you score with 26 seconds left, then you intercepted Taylor Powell's pass, who goes on to be a Division I quarterback with 5 seconds remaining. You knew that you were going to. I think I remember correctly. You knew that that was going to be your last game. Just with that in the back of your mind and just all of that was going on there, when you guys intercepted that pass, just talk about what you were feeling, if you even remember.
Yeah, man, you know, and I gotta go back and unwind this too. You know, the hard thing about anybody doing this, not just us, okay, but playing people twice, good people twice, is so difficult. And you wind it back. We beat Fayetteville every regular season game that we played them in a championship, and we lost the state championship in overtime to Fayetteville. And we had blown them out during the regular season, and we lose in overtime to them. And then the next year, I submit that they were better than we were, but we beat them at our place in the regular season in one of the most incredible high school games I've ever been a part of. And then they beat us in the state championship game. So here they go down the field again, right? And at the end of the game, we led the whole game, and I'm thinking, is this going to – surely this didn't happen again. Somebody's going to make a play. You know, we're going to make a play here. And they scored, but we did what we had done all year. We lined up. We didn't panic. And we probably, to the surprise, a little bit of the faithful people. And Jeb Huckabee was – we talked about this. He was, you know, he's working with FCA now, but with a little time left, I think people probably assumed we were just going to come out and win the football, but we ran the ball down the field, running our stuff, and got down the field. I think we threw one, attempted another pass, and the quarterback scrambled for a first down, but maybe just threw one or two passes on that drive, and the rest of it was just running, like we had, which we'd been good at, and scored, like you said. And so I felt like we're going to win it, but you got to remember too, they have a guy playing in the NFL at this time, right? Dre Greenlaw is over there, and they have a guy who, by all counts, in my estimation, could be playing in the NFL, and O'Grady, Cheyenne O'Grady.
Yeah.
He's incredible. And he's a Keith Jackson type of body. I mean, he throws it up. It's, you know, you just hope you can bring him down when he catches it. You know, because I've seen him for 3 years, and it's just sometimes you just can't do anything about it. He's just that good. So you know what they have over there and the potential to make a play in with Taylor. So it's never – and so it happened. We intercepted, and Cody Scroggins, who's probably maybe as good of an athlete that I've ever coached, smart – just had the it factor. He intercepts it, doesn't try to take it back, finds a safe spot and holds on to it, waits, and kneels down until somebody tried to hit him, and ran most of the time off the clock. And it was a very special feeling. It really was celebrate with the kids in our community. I had thought, you know, going out, I wasn't 100% sure, but I thought this probably was going to be it. My wife met me after with the team up at the tunnel and embraced, and she looked at me and said, "This is it, isn't it?" And I said, "I think so." And that's kind of the way it happened. It was pretty neat, pretty special.
Did you know coming into that season that that would probably – when did the thought really begin to come into your head, like the first time?
Yeah, I began to think about it and pray about it, to be honest with you. It'd be 10 years here. I still had my health. I just got to share where I'm at on it. I'd been coaching for 39 years, got out for 2 years. Athletics have been all part of my life. The thought of, and I don't mean this in disrespect to anybody, but I have friends in all states in coaching, college and then high school, and, you know, staying long enough, you have a chance to meet a lot of people. And I, you know, the conversation would come up with some of us older guys, you know, what are you thinking about retirement? I've seen, in my opinion, I've seen some people that I, and just my outside looking in, hung on too long and maybe coached 2 or 3 years too long. What I mean by that, they just physically maybe didn't have enough to give and lost the drive and the emotion that it seems to take. I've seen some of them coach, you know, heard of guys coaching from golf carts and all. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying I just didn't want to do that. I just didn't. I'm healthy. I could still coach. I think I could still coach today, to be quite frankly. I mean, I really do. In the physical part, in the exciting part, the mental part of it, I don't know anymore. They've evolved so much over the last 8 years and some of the stuff they're doing now. I don't know. I'd have to hire people. But it was just time. I just felt it was time and another challenge for me and another part of my life while I'm still healthy and can do stuff with my family and take my wife and do things that she sacrificed for years. And so I just didn't want to, for me, drop dead out on the football field. That's just me.
And your faith has always been, you know, obviously the biggest priority of your life, and you've used that for the ministry in multiple ways. And I know as of the time of this recording, yourself and former Harding Academy Wildcat, Arkansas Razorback, and Seattle Seahawk, Jeb Huckabee, I guess is how they pronounce it. You guys recently got a podcast going that is going to involve talking with different coaches and various different levels from high school, college, professional. So definitely want to plug that, give you a chance to talk about that you're starting up, but also just kind of talk about what you've done with FCA throughout the years and just some things that you've done with the ministry during your coaching career, but also especially post your coaching career.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, it's FCA has been a big part of my life. And it's quite honest, my coach Stancil that took us to Estes Park, Colorado. I got to hear Tom Landry. In today's world, you got to be careful who you share that with, because you share it with these kids and they look at you like, who, you know, Tom Landry, you know. But, you know, was the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, for some that might not know that's on the podcast, when I always like to kind of rib them and say when they used to be good. And but he really, truly was one of the great professional coaches of all time, in my opinion, and I think many others as well. But I got to hear him share his faith in Estes Park, Colorado in 1969, and forever impacted and influenced my life. And so FCA was in, Coach Stancil had started FCA at our place in Fort Smith Northside. So it was just a kind of a natural fit. I always was the sponsor of the whole sponsor of the schools where I was at FCA. We'd bring in speakers just from around various places to share their faith with our kids and motivate our kids and bring help with our teamwork and identity of who we are, our identity is not in who we are, not in how we perform, but in who we are, right? Who is Barry Lenny? You know, it's not whether I get a Division I scholarship or I throw 27 passes for touchdown. You know, those things are fleeting. Those things just disappear. So anyway, we've been involved with FCA for a number of years, going to coaches' camps, and our families took our vacations, FCA summer camps, and it's been an integral part of my life and our ministry and coaching. as we progressed. And so several years back, many Arkansas fans remember Bill Burnett, an Arkansas legend and just iconic man in this state, he and his brothers. And Bill was stepping down as the state area director, and they asked me if I would take over, and so I did. Now multi-area director of, I think we got 8 counties, go all the way over to Mountain Home and Baxter County and everything in between. And so we're here to provide, speakers for coaches and just here to serve coaches and athletes and everybody that they influence in a positive way. So we're currently that's what we're doing. We're trying to grow a ministry. Jeb is just doing a great job. We are kind of, I think I shared this with you the other day when COVID hit, that we, because the school shut down, Jeb came up with the idea of let's do a Zoom call with our coaches and just try to be there to encourage them through this, right? And it turned into a pretty neat deal. We had several coaches throughout the summer, and Jeb's contacts with some sports agents, NFL, college coaches, my vast, phone book, I guess, or contacts that I have with people that have come through over the years that I've had the pleasure to meet. We decided, hey, let's see if we can continue to find and maybe broaden it out. I don't know what it'll look like, but that's the way we can help coaches and navigate through things. I shared with you the other day, we just did a deal about team building and what it's like to build a program, maybe from scratch or going into a new program where you're a new head coach and you've got assistants that have been there 15 or 20 years. How do you mesh that together and keep people motivated? And so, obviously we're coming from an FCA basis, but it's not a Bible study. I mean, we're just going to speak to issues that are truth, that are relevant, and try to give some solutions and some help to coaches as they go through and navigate through some of the challenges you just talked about a while ago, just the unreal expectations that once you win, that it's just like if you don't beat somebody that, people deem is not very good, if you don't beat them by 35 points, I wonder what's wrong with you tonight. We just didn't click well. And those are not truthful realities, so we're just trying to help minister to those that we have some influence with.
And the way that I always finish these off is I kind of go through just some of the accomplishments here, and pretty much all the guys that I do with this, you could go on, but just some of the main ones here. In 28 years as a head coach, won 248 games, 9th all time, a 733 win percentage. You were 46-13 with your career playoff record, 11 state title appearances, 8-time champion, 17 conference championships, 13 10-win seasons, multiple Coach of the Year awards. Then, of course, also, too, you were in the Arkansas Activities Association Coaches Hall of Fame and the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame. Just some top ones there. And as I said, you can continue to go on. But you just talked about your ministry there and how you the way that you are trying to make a difference there, leading coaches and led players all these years. But at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, how do you want to be remembered as Barry Lunney Sr., not just Coach Lunney?
Ooh, man, won't you find a hard question, huh? I think that, the highest compliment that I could probably receive, and I'm sharing this about with a friend of mine who passed away for his family and in the service tomorrow, a dear friend, FCA guy. And I think that, Kyle would be just to say that, he represented his Lord well. I do. I hope I can say that they can say that he lived his faith out and that he loved kids. I hope that's what we see. All this other stuff is great, and I appreciate you. I really do. It's very flattering, humbling to hear those things. But at the end of the day, for me, it's, did I make any, what difference have I made in somebody's life? That, like, my life was changed, and my coach has made a difference to me by taking me somewhere where I heard the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I know this is not necessarily a religious podcast, and it doesn't come, but this is who I feel like I want to be. And I I hope I can make say I made a difference in people's lives. I mean, if it's just winning games or teaching them how to throw a football or kick one, so what? You know, at the end of the day, so what? So, yeah, I will say that probably one of the somebody's asked me a couple of questions about this before in a different way. And of course, I always come back to that. I have to start that way first. If I succeeded in everything else and failed in the spiritual part of it in my life, I think I've not been a very successful person. But, you know, what's the most proud moment you have? Probably both your kids playing for you for state champ. My wife says, you know how many guys would kill to have one state championship with one of their sons, you know? And I said, I know, don't remind me. I get, you know, it's just overwhelming sometimes. But I was telling Barry and I were talking the other day and something came up and I said, probably some of the most proud thing that, I don't know if pride's the word I use, but I think that getting our kids, wherever it was, at Southside or in Bentonville or BB, to, didn't matter who we played, that when they stepped out on the field, they thought they could win. They believed in themselves. It didn't matter if we played Euless Trinity in Texas, Bergman Catholic from New Jersey when I was at Bentonville, going to Texas to play Sherman or Marshall, Texas, not Southside. Getting the kids to walk out there and thinking, yeah, we belong here. Now, we didn't win all those games, but there was the belief that it's just the fostering belief in themselves that they can compete. And I took a lot of joy in seeing that. You know, I remember when South Panola, Mississippi showed up here one night. They'd won like 50-something games, and that made it incredible. I looked at them. I got scared. I thought, I have overscheduled. I'm going to get my kids hurt tonight. And we thrashed them. And it just dawned on our kids. They stepped out there and they thought they were going to win. I mean, it was incredible. And I thought, that's pretty cool. You know, their coach was scared. But they believed because they had done so many things that they believed in each other and believed in themselves. And I think life is a lot like that, right? You got to believe. You just got to believe you belong. You got to believe that you can do something. And if you lose hope and you approach everything in a negative way and look at it from the, it's always half empty glass. I think there's something to that, just being a part of helping people believe.
Thanks for listening to Gridiron Icons, Arkansas's greatest high school coaches podcast powered by Scorebook Live. Special thanks to Chris Campbell, the Arkansas Activities Association, the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and the Barclay Almanac of Arkansas High School Football. Subscribe to the show on Spotify so you're alerted when we release a new episode, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter for updates at Gridiron Icons AR.